Welcome to Political Rewind. It's 3:06 on a Friday afternoon, and as usual, we're coming to you live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. Full table here in the studio today, plus we have a special guest on the telephone from Columbus. And we're going to start with a very big story that we've all been tracking since late Wednesday afternoon down at the state capitol. Pretty much out of nowhere on Wednesday afternoon, a bill was introduced, a substitute version of a religious liberty bill that has been one of the most controversial measures the entire session and before that, suddenly was introduced and put into debate on the floor, first in the House, then in the Senate. Jim Galloway, I think it's fair to say, and let me introduce everybody first. Jim Galloway from the AJC, political writer, and he oversees the Political Insider blog online every day, as well as you can read his column in the Thursday and Sunday Constitution. Greg Bluestein, also from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, one of their top political reporters, and Todd Rehm, the editor of GeorgiaPundit.com and a Republican political consultant. In a minute, we're going to be joined by Representative Carla Drenner in the studio and Josh McCoon on the telephone. So, Jim, I'm sorry. Tell me what happened on Wednesday afternoon.
Well, we had started hearing some rumblings early Wednesday. We had an adjournment in the House, and the caucuses went to their private quarters here, and they were shown the new compromise on religious liberty. It had elements of the Speaker David Ralston's pastor protection bill in there. It had elements of a RFRA bill in there. It had some. It's hard. It's a mishmash.
A little bit of the Greg Kirk First Amendment Defense Act.
Right. We've got some where we're starting to get some complaints from the right side of the aisle that it does not include specific protections for private businesses. But otherwise, it was pretty much everything that that was asked for by religious liberty advocates.
And as we'll talk about with Representative Drennan and Senator McCoon in a minute, it really did take most people by surprise. Certainly Democrats in the state House were caught off guard. They didn't see the bill until it literally was laid on their desks and they were asked to debate it and vote on it. And so let's do that. And you're all welcome to join this conversation here in the studio. Senator McCoon, thanks for joining us. I know you're down in Columbus, but we appreciate having you on the phone.
Good afternoon, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Jim Galloway mentioned to me just before the program started something that's, I think, interesting for us to talk about. He said that before the Republican and Democratic caucuses on Wednesday, you were shown a copy of this bill in a more personal setting, in a more private setting. You got a chance. I think you talked about it with the lieutenant governor. Is that right?
Well, all of us that have been involved in the various legislation were given the opportunity to have some input on what we eventually received, and that was true for me as well. That's correct.
But you did see it. Look, I think we need to say to our listeners who don't know, you have been the driving force, the animating force behind this legislation, now moving into this year, your third session. So it would make sense if you had a little advance look at what the new version of the bill would be, right?
That's right. And, you know, obviously the lieutenant governor and the Senate leadership team, they've been working very hard on this all session. I know that there's been a lot of negotiation going on with the House leadership as well. But, yes, I was given the opportunity to see the bill earlier in the day.
Okay. And are you happy with it?
Well, it's like any compromise. I mean, obviously, there are things that we would like to do better. My friend Ryan Anderson at the Daily Signal today has a story saying that we gutted the bill. I think that's a little strong. But, you know, we included some non-discrimination language in the RFRA piece that obviously it was something that had been called for repeatedly. The First Amendment Defense Act now no longer applies to for-profit businesses. There's no mechanism for that to occur. So it's a really stripped-down version, but I think it still does some significant things for people of faith in our state. And so, like any compromise, you know, everybody has to give a little bit to get where you want to go. And I feel like this, version of 757 strikes that balance.
Josh, is it fair to say that yes, it includes discrimination protections, but those discrimination protections do not include the LGBT community?
Well, what I would say about that is that local ordinances, if they were challenged under a RFRA statute, would be subject to the balancing test that RFRA has. And I have maintained throughout this debate that, you know, if a non-discrimination ordinance at the local level was challenged, that the person objecting would lose. There's no reason for me to believe that has changed. But, you know, we were asked in 2014 to come with the federal language for RFRA. We did that in 2015. We were told that wasn't enough. We needed to add non-discrimination language. Now we've done that in 2016. I'm sure the goalpost will be moved again by folks on the other side. But I feel like we have really made a lot of compromises in this bill to try to address the most prominent concerns that have been voiced over the last 2 years.
Senator, let me bring Representative Drenner in here. Representative Drenner, you made a very passionate speech about this from the on the floor of the House Wednesday, late afternoon, early evening. Do you believe that the federal RFRA does, in fact, offer anti-discrimination protection that Senator McCoon is talking about?
Absolutely not. That is a complete misrepresentation of what the intent of the bill is. In fact, the bill as written right now allows organizations with taxpayer dollars to discriminate based upon not just the LGBT community. It can be an interracial couple, an interfaith couple. It can be a single mother. The list is long, and using a RFRA for something that it wasn't designed to be used for in the first place is the way that Senator McCoon has twisted the intent behind the federal law.
Senator, let me pick up and ask you to explain one aspect of this. There is a line in the bill, the compromise that you all passed, which to the way I read it, suggests that if there is no prevailing statute in a given community or in a city, Atlanta has an anti-discrimination ordinance, but it does appear there's a line in the bill which says without that sort of language, and certainly without a state civil rights statute designed to protect the gay and lesbian community, doesn't this sort of open the door for discrimination, for people to choose not to do business to deal with gays and lesbians?
Absolutely not. I mean, the 23-year history of this law makes it very clear that where government, regardless of what level of government, identifies a compelling state interest and pursues an act to further that interest and is using the least restrictive means to do so, they're going to overcome a RFRA objection. This is one of the, you know, things that opponents have said that's incredibly misleading, is to suggest that the bill is some kind of blanket exemption. And I would also say the notion that this is going to countenance someone to, you know, discriminate on the basis of race or religion is simply untrue. I mean, you know,
Josh, if I can interrupt here, I mean, the law, the statute was carefully constructed to avoid the mention of same-sex marriage as a foundation for religious belief or religious objections. It just says any faith-based reason. So any faith-based reason would do, would it not?
Yes, this is not narrowly defined at all.
That, you know, the fact of the matter is this law doesn't exist in a vacuum, and it is just unbelievably irresponsible to suggest that this is going to lead to people mistreating folks on the basis of race or religion. The fact of the matter is that
the
strategy
before.
Of the opponents from the beginning has been to parade this series of hypothetical horrible scenarios that have never occurred in any other state with religious freedom legislation. And I don't know if it's because people think that Georgia judges are going to interpret the law differently, that we're somehow backwards.
Senator, let me get
the other 31 jurisdictions.
Senator, let me get Representative Drenner in here to give her a chance.
You know, he raises some interesting points for me. First of all, there is a 23-year history. 23 years that Georgia didn't feel the need to have this until Senator McCoon went out and started talking about there was a problem. There's a problem out in Georgia in which he cites legal cases that have been settled by the First Amendment, the U.S. Constitution. But now all of a sudden, we have some undefined problem in which this law is going to protect someone who already has protections underneath the U.S. Constitution, the Georgia Constitution, Title VII. Religious individuals are not being discriminated against. I haven't. In fact, what I think is very interesting in this discussion is that religious people are discriminated against, but gay people are never discriminated against. They're never. In fact, you can't even get anyone to recognize the fact that gay people in this state have ever been discriminated against. I've had a bill for the last 3 years, the Fair Employment Practices Act, where I've had 69 signatures. I've never gotten a vote on the bill. And then when you ask people, ask my colleagues, why? Well, there's no discrimination. So if you look at this 23-year history and think about what originally RFRA was designed to do, this is being misused as a measure in advance, as a prophylactic measure, because same-sex marriage is now legal.
Senator?
That's absurd. I mean, I introduced this bill before the Supreme Court decision, a year and a half before the Supreme Court decision. I've talked all over the state about the numerous examples at the K-12 public education level, university system level, of people of faith being mistreated, being treated in a hostile manner by unelected bureaucrats in this state. We've made the case for the last 3 years of why this law is needed. In 2011, 2012, and 2013, we had measures in the Georgia General Assembly dealing with bits and pieces of the problem of government being hostile towards people of faith. And, you know, Senator Kirk brought his bill in the wake of the Supreme Court decision, and obviously that's part of 757, and that's because when the Solicitor General of the United States in oral argument can't give people of faith any assurance that they're not going to be subject to taxation if they teach traditional marriage, religious schools aren't going to have their accreditation revoked, that faith-based adoption agencies aren't going to be shut down. These are very real concerns that millions of Georgians have.
Senator Greg Bluestein wants to get a word in here.
Senator, just a quick question. If the strategy of opponents is parading those hypotheticals, then why not add a strong anti-discrimination clause just to sort of counter that argument?
We did. We added, you know, we have taken the entire body of federal law, including the Supreme Court's decision last summer, and we've said if any of that applies, then RFRA is not available.
Representative Drenner, you don't think that what he's just said is it covers everything that you're concerned about? Is that right?
No, I don't think it does at all. The discrimination exemption that he's talking about only applies to Section 6 of the bill. It doesn't apply
to... What does that mean to our listeners, Section 6?
Well, it specifically with regard to the section that he is discussing is the RFRA section. But the caveat here is even though there's a discrimination provision there, if you look in the bill itself, it says that discrimination is prohibited by federal or state law. There are no federal laws that prohibit discrimination against the LGBT community. There are no state law. We have no state law that prohibits discrimination against the LGBT community. So that's a moot point.
All right. So, Todd Rehm, you've been listening very patiently to all of this. Here's the question that I have asked for ever since Senator McCoon first introduced his measure two sessions before this one. How do we get to the bottom of this? The Carla Drenner and many of her support, the people on her side of this, insist it discriminates or opens the door for discrimination. Sarah McCune forcefully argues it doesn't. How do we, there's got to be some truth here, doesn't there?
I don't know. When I was in undergrad, we were taught to distrust the idea that there is an objective truth.
Okay, but this is a statute.
And I think, as with many legal situations, what we're going to do is we're not going to find out anything definitive until we've had 30 years of litigation on it. And I think that's ultimately where we end up is determining what's what through the court system.
And look, I agree. I think what's happening here is that the House and Senate leadership have decided to pass out a bill, and if the governor signs it, if Governor Nathan Deal signs it, it's going to be a decision to let the courts sort this out.
Okay, fair enough. Greg Bluestein?
Senator, do you think the governor will sign it?
You know, Greg, I certainly hope that the governor will sign it. I mean, I think, again, if you listen to the faith community, I mean, people are, concerned about the fact that we gave as much as we did on this bill. And if the governor vetoes the bill, then, we'll be back at the next legislative session arguing over this issue again. I think that, Todd made the point about litigation, at least as to the RFRA part, 757. It's been litigated for about a quarter of a century, and the opponents have been unable to cite a single case where a judge has sanctioned discriminatory behavior of any kind.
All right. Representative Drenner, I want to give you a last word here, too, because we're running out of time.
Well, if, in fact, the governor does veto it and you do come back next year with the same kind of bill, perhaps you'll bring some evidence yourself to suggest that why Georgia needs something where it discriminates against part of its population.
Senator? We've detailed dozens of examples around the state where this has occurred, and I would invite Representative Drenner to any, of the meetings that we've had where we have detailed dozens and dozens of examples, not just in this state, but states like Kansas, where Mary Steinmetz, a Jehovah's Witness,
well, we're not talking about Kansas right now. We're talking about Georgia. This is a Georgia law that we are talking about that impacts Georgia citizens. And you know what? We should not have to go to other states looking for problems.
All right.
People should not be dying for their faith in our country.
Okay.
It should not be happening.
Okay, I appreciate, really do, the passion on each side of this issue. It is exactly why this is one of the hottest measures, certainly in my history of watching the legislature over the last almost 30 years. And we know it's not over. The governor has until the beginning of May to sign or to veto this bill. And we will watch and we will continue to have conversations and And Representative Drenner, Senator McCune, as this thing moves on, we'll bring you back. We can talk more as developments warrant, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you
very much for being here. You're listening to Political Rewind. We'll be back. We're going to talk a little bit about how this magically appeared last Wednesday night and then move on to other politics.
There are just a few days left for your opportunity to receive orchestra-level seats for GPB's Evening with David Sedaris in Savannah. The best-selling author and public radio humorist is coming to the Lucas Theater for one night only, Saturday, April 16th. There are just a few seats left with your support of GPB. Grab yours now before they're gone at gpb.org/David. That's gpb.org/David. Thanks, and we hope to see you there.
Take your spring cleaning to the next level by donating your car, truck, or van to GPB. We'll take care of everything, including free pickup, and send you the paperwork for your tax deduction. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
You're listening to Political Rewind. It's almost 3:26 on Friday afternoon. Sitting at the table with me, Todd Rehm, GeorgiaPundit.com. He is also a Republican political consultant. and Greg Bluestein and Jim Galloway of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. All right, gentlemen, let me recap very quickly and then get you to respond. David Ralston, Speaker Ralston, wanted to help satisfy his members with some sort of religious freedom bill that would address at least some of the concerns that are out there among constituents of Republicans around the state. So he introduces pastor protection, and pretty much everyone is willing to get on board because all it says is if you're a pastor, you don't have to marry people you don't want to marry, right?
Right.
Right.
Innocuous, but he hopes gives him cover to go back for re-election. Senate takes that bill. They add the much more problematic First Amendment Defense Act. It goes back to the House. And then the governor says, you know, I would be happy if nothing came out this session, and cites scripture, Jim Galloway, to describe why he doesn't want discrimination to become an issue in the state. So we're all thinking, well, that's that. Maybe there'll be nothing. All of a sudden, Wednesday evening, late afternoon, this appears on the floor. What happened?
Well, let me offer a theory here, all right? Only a day or so before that, a few days before that, the Senate had passed the final version of the campus carry bill. And upon receipt of it, the governor said he had some problems with it. And, you know, just the things at the Capitol work this way. The legislature, House Republicans, Senate Republicans, thought they might be getting the shaft on that issue, and they decided to send a message to the governor, and that's religious liberty. That's a working theory.
Yeah, they certainly put him on the spot. Todd, it is certainly true that David Ralston wanted campus carry very much. That was a big measure for him.
I've got to say, I think there are a lot of folks wondering today why we have qualifying before the legislature ends, because that really has ratcheted up the tension level on a lot of
Explain
issues.
How that happens. Why?
Well, it happens because of the, my understanding is because of the federal rules.
No, I mean, why does qualifying happening when it does ratchet up the pressure?
So now you've got something like 50 state representatives.
Right at 50. Mm-hmm.
And just by the numbers, a majority of those are Republicans. And what, about 10, 15 senators who are opposed primarily by members of their own party? If you are in a rural district, the pressure is on you to come back to your voters and say, we did something conservative this session. And that has really, you've seen, I think, a dramatic rise in the tension and the pressure from the right of the Republican Party upon incumbent legislators, whether you're talking about congressmen or state legislators.
Greg, unmentioned in this conversation so far is the fact that, not unexpectedly, the business community has really expressed its deep concerns, the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, individual companies, about this bill getting a signature from the governor.
They're trying to make it as hard as it can be for Governor Deal to sign this into law. Remember, this is the governor who campaigned for a second term on the argument that he's made Georgia the number one place in the nation to do business. You've got the Metro Atlanta Chamber. You've got other Georgia companies, and you've got Mark Benioff of Salesforce, who's really corralling a litany of tech executives from around the world, really. You've got Intel. You've got, well, MailChimp from Atlanta today. You've got all sorts of other companies that are sending messages via Twitter saying, urging the governor to veto this.
But in any state, small businesses form the majority of employers. And to believe that all employers, all businesses in the state of Georgia are represented by any organization headquartered in Atlanta is a far cry. What I think is going to be interesting and will tell you a lot is whether the governor makes any appearances at county conventions of the Republican Party this weekend. For a number of years, that's been sort of an informal tradition. Johnny Isaacson, I'm sure, will be at as many as he can get to. And I wonder whether Governor Deal will go out, because he would certainly, anyone going to those is going to be hearing about the campus carry bill and the religious liberties issues.
All right, so two big measures, the religious liberty bill and campus carry, in the hands of the governor right now. Jim, if anybody can take a bullet over one bill or the other, and I'm sorry, I did not mean that in a, you know, sorry about the analogy. If anybody can stand up and not worry about the consequences of either of the of dealing with either of these, it's Governor Deal. He's not running for re-election. He could certainly veto religious liberty, and he is never going to face the wrath of voters again, or campus carry. On the other hand, he's got an agenda that he wants. He's still got a big, big education package. Greg Bluestein, you're nodding vigorously.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the devil's advocate here. Of course, yeah, he doesn't have to face the voters anymore, and the Metro Atlanta Chamber and their support is very important to him. And yet, this is something that the GOP base has clamored for. We were both, all three of us were at the convention in last May, I guess it was, in Athens, where the activists, the delegates overwhelmingly supported a religious liberty bill without this anti-discrimination clause. So the base is clamoring for it, and he needs the same lawmakers who would support this. He needs for his education overhaul.
He's got his school takeover constitutional amendment in November that's sitting on the ballot. He has yet to, he's got two more budgets to pass, three more budgets to pass that he's going to have to pass in the future, and a lot of punishment can be exacted right there.
That was exactly what I was going to say, is that sort of the centerpiece of his legacy is looking to be both the school district and reforming the funding formula.
Yeah, he wants to redo with quality basic education.
And so while he doesn't have to go before the voters, he does have to deal with the same General Assembly. And I think we're beginning to see some attempt to figure out how much power he still has by the legislature and see where the point is. You know, how much can they push back? Because they haven't done a whole lot of that historically.
There are people tweeting us at PoliticsGPB about this conversation. And if you want to join the conversation, you can do the same, PoliticsGPB. And this, I think, is pretty interesting, actually, Todd Rehm. KRP Fan says, this is why people are voting for Trump, finding solutions to problems that don't exist. I assume that's a reference to the religious liberty measure. I do think it's interesting to bring Trump into play because it really is what he's really or she is really saying is, here's government at its worst again.
Well, and I think there are probably going to be people that are saying that, you know, we need Trump-style leadership to get conservative legislation again. And Trump has become in politics the tabula rasa. He is whatever you think he is.
Well, this has been an incredible session for Governor Deal, in that if you look at his past sessions, he's played a very behind-the-scenes role, rarely stepping on any lawmakers' toes. He was criticized last year during the transportation debate for not playing a much more forward or vocal role in it, letting lawmakers hash out the details. And yet this year, you've had on three or four different instances on major bills, him coming in, including with the campus carry after it passed, saying, whoa, you guys went a little too far. I now want another bill. You had him do that with medical marijuana. You've had him do that with religious liberty, with remarkable comments, making a biblical case against them.
Yeah, and I think you'd have some lawmakers say it's fine for the governor to come out and say what he's for and what he's against, but he needs to speak with a little more clarity.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Fine, make your statements, but then stick by your guns, pal. You know, I mean, that's a really interesting thing to say. All right, let's talk about a couple other legislative issues, and after that, we'll take a break and come back. There's some interesting developments as far as Georgia goes in presidential politics, too. Todd Rehm, you have over the years worked with Senator Renee Unterman. She always finds it, always, by the end of the session, manages to plant herself in the middle of some of the thorniest issues that the legislature deals with. So this year, she's in a couple of bills that people want to get to the bottom of. There's been a bill this session that seemed to have overwhelming support, in the House at least, that would expedite the processing of rape kits that have stood unattended at hospitals around the state. I think it passed by a huge margin in the House, right, Greg?
Yeah. Overwhelming.
Yeah. And it looked like senators were all for it, too. In fact, Senator Josh McCoon was on Lawmakers the other night. When we were talking about RFRA, we talked about this, and he said he thinks it should pass. Senator Unterman is holding it back. Why?
Well, it's what I would say is that the committee system is holding it back, and I'm not sure. I don't think it's accurate to say that she has sought the limelight.
Oh no, I didn't. I just said she's been right there, though.
Yeah, and
at the door.
And this is a recurring theme: is that decisions that are made in her committee makes in terms of bills they're not going to move forward or not allow. Not bring up for a vote. She gets much more attention for what doesn't come through her committee than any other member I can think of, and which is odd. But what I've also seen is that this really highlights a couple different things about governance. One is that the committee system is not just something that is bent to the will of the chairman of whatever committee is there. It is a process that the majority caucus uses to prioritize bills. And what they tend to do is not prioritize bills that they don't think will pass their chamber. And so when you see a bill that gets stopped in committee in the House or in the Senate, sometimes it's a judgment that it's not going to make it through passage on the floor of that House.
Well, but the Rape Kit bill seems to be really, really a bill that most people, again, if the House is any indication, the Senate wants.
If you don't listen to what Senator Unterman says, you might think that, but What I know she finds frustrating and what I consider to be frustrating is that there has been a great deal of movement within her committee to deal with the problem. They're just choosing a different solution than the Democratic state representative wanted. The Democratic state representative wants a law to deal with how things are processed in hospitals and in law enforcement. What she has chosen to do with her committee is to take a long look, four different meetings during the winter, looking at the issue from the perspectives of law enforcement, from the hospitals that deal with these kits, and from a systemic perspective of where does the problem occur and how do we fix it. And they've taken the steps of actually setting up a process that is clearing the backlog, and they will continue to monitor to make sure the backlog is cleared and then look for a legislative answer if there's no action.
Is there a problem with rape kits? Renee Unterman says there's not, by the way. She said that on Lawmakers the other night.
She did. And the problem she faces is that it's not just Democrats making that case, but it's Republicans as well. House Speaker David Ralston, Senator Charlie Bethel, and others. And we've also picked up some word that Governor Deal might be behind some sort of changes to the law this late in the session. So. You know, she's not the. She's also made the argument that Scott Holcomb, the Democratic sponsor of the bill, was overly politicized, which has only added fuel to the fire over this argument. So it's really become a political argument here near the end of the session.
It is interesting, Jim, that the only female Republican in the Georgia State Senate is Nan Orrick. I'm sorry.
Janice Vanessa.
I'm sorry. Thank you for clarifying. This is why I have you here, to keep my head clear. All right. So one of only two Republican women in the Senate, and many people would say this is an issue that women would really stand up for.
I think you're right.
That's first time in the last minute. all right. It is an interesting situation. There's no way this is coming out of her committee, right?
I wouldn't anticipate that. I don't think you're going to have any more committee meetings.
If it doesn't happen Tuesday,
well, that's
it's not going to happen at all.
Right.
But the House can always grab a bill and try to stuff it inside.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do this. Let's take another break. Before we do, though, let me just share with you a couple more tweets. By the way, I got a tweet at PoliticsGPB did from Sun Tzu Speaks. Please be better at moderating next time. Lots of talking and whispering over Josh McCoon when he was making his points. Well, you know what? I felt like I was moderating a Republican presidential debate for a couple minutes there. I'm sorry. I couldn't keep them to hushing their mouths during the conversation. Let's take a break. You're listening to Political Rewind.
A new debut novel called The Nest looks at adult siblings who can't wait for their inheritance. For the 55-year-old author, the idea of writing a book was not inevitable.
I mean, I did imagine it, but that was like the way I imagined winning an Academy Award.
Talking with a first-time novelist later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 until 7 on GPB.
You're listening to Political Rewind with Bill Nigut here on Georgia Public Broadcasting, an 18-station radio network. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, offering 55 undergraduate and graduate degree programs in more than 250 fields of study.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. It's 3:41 on Friday afternoon, and I've got Greg Bluestein from the AJC, Todd Rehm, Georgia in GeorgiaPundit.com, and Jim Galloway from the AJC here. So interesting development, and I think, Jim, you're the one who talked to him. Eric Erickson, our friend over at AM 750, was part of a group of conservative Republicans who went up to Washington the other day, yesterday. They formed a little loose organization called Conservatives Against Trump, and they're looking for some way to stop Trump from winning the nomination at the convention.
Right, right. I think Eric told me that he attended only by phone, but but they've got he describes them as grassroots conservatives. We're not getting any names. We don't know how high a profile the interior of this club is. But they're looking to see if they can get Cruz and Ted Cruz and John Kasich to start working together, and perhaps in that fashion over the next 2 months steal the nomination away from Donald Trump.
They're talking about dividing the country in half, right? Ted Cruz gets to campaign in the Western state Republican primaries, and Kasich gets all the states. I don't know east
of the Mississippi. Yeah, I mean, it's. I pointed out it's kind of like Augustus and Mark Antony kind of divided the Roman Empire.
Todd, here's a part of the statement that they issued. We believe that the issue of Donald Trump is greater than an issue of party. It is an issue of morals and character that all Americans, not just those of us in the conservative movement, must confront.
Well, they certainly are passionate about the issue. But here's one thing that I would say is that there are those of us who are going to be dealing with Georgia Republicans for the foreseeable future. And those of us who have to get along with whoever's in office. And that is a luxury you have if you're an entertainer instead of somebody working in politics.
Yeah. Greg, Newt Gingrich almost immediately had a response to the conservatives up there on the Hill. I think you wrote about that, right? Or up there in Washington talking.
Yeah, he said basically give it up, right? I mean, he said there's a lot of Republicans coming around to the sentiment that there's no way to stop Donald Trump. You might as well get on board.
Gingrich called it, and I get this from Political Insider, by the way.
Of course you did.
It's an amusing parlor game. It has no meaning in the real world. That is, looking for somehow a consensus candidate, a unity candidate. And he says, Eric Erickson's not playing a risk-free game. It's not like there's some pure middle way. If he does not support the Republican nominee, he functionally is supporting Hillary Clinton in the general election.
And that's the core to all this, because if you are one of those people who want to stop Trump, you are making an assumption. You're operating on the assumption that Donald Trump cannot beat Hillary Clinton. And there are stats to go with that assumption. There's a good dose of reality to go there, and that's what has Republican leaders up and down the ticket worried, because they're worried about the impact on the down ballot.
You know, Greg, I think it is worth going back to the red state gathering, which was the beginning, really, of the split between Donald Trump and Eric Erickson. Do you recall what happened?
Oh yes, it was right after the debate. The Republican debate.
The first Fox debate.
Fox News, where Donald Trump made some less than chivalrous comments about Megyn Kelly. And he was, after Donald Trump flirted around with not coming to the red state, he was disinvited by Eric Erickson.
Yeah, the red state gathering was one of the early beauty show pageants, as we call them, for Republican presidential candidates. I think five or six of them were invited to come down here, as I recall, by Eric Erickson. And my recollection is Trump was supposed to speak on Saturday morning.
Saturday, mm-hmm. Yeah.
The last speaker, right.
That's right. And Eric Erickson came out on that Saturday morning. I was there. I don't know if you all were, Todd. I don't know. And in a very kind of solemn way announced that based on Trump's comments about Megyn Kelly, he just could not allow him to come to Georgia to give him a showcase because he has a daughter that he did not want to hear the language of Donald Trump.
And it's interesting. Three presidential candidates weren't invited to that shindig. One of them was Ben Carson. The other one was John Kasich and Donald Trump. And so two of those three are the ones still in the race.
I've got to say, though, that Eric Erickson's got to be happy that Donald J. Trump has started insulting him on Twitter now. That's a real shot to the status.
He's getting a lot more follows.
But one of the things about this is that what many people refer to as the Republican leadership has got to get over the idea that they can outthink the electorate, because it's their belief that they can outthink the electorate, manipulate the electorate, that got them into this problem right now. And I have long said that I don't believe Trump will be the nominee. And if you believe that we are still the same party that nominated Mitt Romney and George W. Bush and John McCain, it's hard to believe that Trump is going to be the nominee. And so why not have more trust in the voters if that's what you think is the best outcome?
So another Georgian came into play in the last couple of days, Randy Evans. Who's Randy Evans?
Randy Evans, first of all, you got to remember he's a close confidant of Newt Gingrich, who has already made his views known. But he's also a member of the RNC from Georgia. He has kind of overseen, debated every Georgia Republican convention that I've been to.
And perhaps even more key to this, he's a member of the Rules Committee, right?
Rules and the Debate Committees.
Okay.
He has laid down the rules of the convention. And he sent me a note this afternoon. You can see it up online on the Political Insider, where he kind of threw out the five big answers about an open convention in Cleveland.
And they were really important. Can you go over a couple of them?
Well, basically it was, you know, what are our chances of going to Cleveland without a clear candidate? He says, they're more than likely there'll be a presumed nominee going into Cleveland, but it's still possible.
I think as I read the notes that he sent you that you published, he said he thinks Trump's going to be pretty close, if not over the top.
Right. And the key figure to watch, he said, is the one. If he comes with closer than 100 delegates, then he'll probably get it with no problem. If he finishes short by more than 100 delegates, then watch out, there may be trouble. And he closed this note out saying, well, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen in Cleveland? A filibuster.
What does that mean?
That means you have no candidate comes close to 1237, the number of delegates you need. You have competing organizations that prevent any decision from being made, and the meeting lasts longer than the hotel reservations.
and by the way, that's why what's happening this weekend in Georgia is also so important. We're having county GOP meetings all over in dozens of counties around Georgia. And that's where delegates will be picked for these candidates. And a lot of one of the more important questions, because remember, most delegates can be unbound. They have to vote for their candidate on the first ballot, but some of them don't have to vote on the second ballot. And they could vote for Cruz or a third party candidate or whoever.
And that's you just made a really important point, because I think what you're saying is that when these delegates are selected, it's who they really prefer second that could matter most.
Or third or fourth, depending on how many rounds of votes.
Right, so you're going to have Ted Cruz's people this weekend in Georgia making sure that that the Trump delegates that are selected think very highly of Ted Cruz.
At the earlier stage, the mass meetings, which were several weeks ago, if you remember, that the Cruz people had folks signing up at most of the precinct mass meetings to be Cruz supporters. So they've identified a lot of the potential delegates. If you're in one of those counties that had mass meetings, you had to have been there to move to the next stage. And they've got a good idea who your first and second choices are probably. Now, the Trump campaign sent out an email yesterday to their supporters saying, hey, if you're interested in being a delegate, go to this next weekend's county conventions if you're in one of those counties. But it feels to me like they're about 3 weeks behind Cruz, and Cruz had a plan to work at every single level all the time, which is why you're seeing him come out of states 10 points behind Trump, but with almost as many delegates. He's got a much more granular plan to win the nomination.
The Cruz people in Georgia have slates already drawn up for Saturday.
Interesting.
For the Trump people.
So the point you made is, excuse me, the Trump people are acting late. And if what I heard, I want to make sure listeners and I heard this right. If the Trump people are sending out this message, those people are too late. If they had to have participated previously.
In some areas, but it is helpful to have been at the precinct mass meetings. But I'm not sure that in some of the conventions, what will happen is you won't have enough people who were at the precinct mass meetings. You'll have open slots. But you are definitely a leg up if you were at the precinct mass meetings. And in counties like Gwinnett County, where often there are more people wanting to be delegates at the district and at the state convention than they have slots, whether you were there before is very important.
Okay.
And this is where the race is at now. This is the shadow campaign. I mean, there's still big contests coming up. But the shadow campaign, even though Georgia's primary was weeks ago, is still very much in full effect.
Yes. But, again, every delegate who's elected, whether it's Georgia or any other state, who goes to the Republican National Convention is going to have to – is bound on the first vote by the person who won their congressional district or, in the case of winner-take-all states, who won the state.
But here's another thing. If a candidate has – if a presidential candidate has suspended his campaign or quit the race, his delegates – that he won at the state level are unbound. That's in the RNC rules.
Are you sure? Because I've been told that if they suspend, if they quit the campaign, yes. If they suspend, no, I
looked at the RNC rules and it said or suspend
really?
They're not bound.
Well, Randy Evans, if you're listening to this show, tweet us at PoliticsGPB and tell us
now,
unequivocally.
I will say, I emailed Randy to follow up on that, and I haven't heard back.
Okay.
Maybe I have the old email.
Because
address.
That's a very important point, because certainly Marco Rubio could be holding on to his delegates. He suspended his campaign. I think Ben Carson's just suspended his campaign. So the fate of those delegates is really interesting. Let me just go to one other point that Randy Evans made that I thought was interesting. The question is, that he asked himself and then answered is, if Donald Trump is the nominee, what are the chances of a third-party challenge? And a lot of people out there are asking this question. Our listeners are no different, I suspect. Randy says, very minimal. And he explains why. Do you?
Well, basically, yeah. You've got, if you create a party, you have to get it on the ballot state by state, and the rules for getting on the ballot are arcane and they're tough. In Georgia, it's incredibly hard to get on for a third party to get on a ballot. Now, what he does say is he concedes a point that Eric Erickson has made as an alternative strategy for his grassroots effort, and that is you hijacked an existing party that already has ballot access, and a likely target in this case would be the Constitution Party.
Now I read that I think just yesterday that a federal judge has enjoined part of the presidential ballot access rules in Georgia and dramatically lowered what it takes for a third party to get on in Georgia. That only affects this state, but it might be easier for a third party here now.
And here again, Greg Bluestein, is why this is one of the most extraordinary presidential years any of us has seen. It's been a very long time since the rules around the delegates to a national convention have been of such great interest.
Until they actually matter, and that's where there's a very huge chance we're going to go into an open convention.
Yeah. And you've already got a presidential candidate threatening a riot.
Threatening riots. I was about to say the same thing. Who's talking about there will be riots if he's not seen. And you have establishment figures like Casey Cagle, who last night said he can't imagine him not being seated. He can't imagine him not getting the nomination, because if he's got the momentum coming into it, how could the party spurn him?
All right. With just a couple of minutes we have left, I want to go back to the state for a few remarks from each of you. We're down to now the last 2 days of the 2016 session. The legislature will not meet Monday, but they're back on Tuesday for day 39. That is promises to be an incredibly long day, I assume. It usually is. They're out on Wednesday, and then Thursday's it. Day 40, sine die, as Speaker Tom Murphy used to like to say. What are we looking at? that's outstanding that you think is going to be in the on the front page of your newspaper next week?
Religious liberty for sure, campus carry for sure. The big question for religious liberty is if the governor says anything, if there's any attempts to soften the language in a separate bill, or if the governor says anything that might telegraph his intentions. Campus carry, the governor, the bill is already passed. Now the governor has called for new changes. Lawmakers so far have ignored those calls.
Yeah, Rick Jaspers the other night, I asked him about lawmakers. I said, which of the changes are you going to work out? And he said, none.
So we could have a situation where the governor vetoes, I'm not saying it will happen, but could veto the two biggest, most controversial bills out of the session.
By the way, a quick comment about the governor and RFRA before we get out of the show. He talked to our colleague Lori Geary at Channel 2 News about the religious liberty bill, and he had an interesting thing to say.
Yeah, he said he was pleasantly surprised they were able to pass something, but that it doesn't make it any easier for him to, you know, make this decision.
Okay.
All right.
What are you watching?
What I'm watching. Okay. Number one, you do have a bill there, bill to reduce the privileges that police officers get when appearing before grand juries, which is very important. Most important, you have a MARTA rail bill that's going to cover the city of Atlanta only, but it's still a statement by Republican leaders in the Capitol that they want to move on transit.
Okay. Todd, what's going to pop up on GeorgiaPundit.com? He shrugs. I don't know.
The fate of House Bill 561 designating the adoptable dog as the official state dog. That's the biggest thing I'm watching.
If you are not a reader of GeorgiaPundit.com, you do not know that if you want to get to the political news on Todd's website, you've got to scroll through all of these cute little puppies and sometimes not so young dogs that he cares passionately about finding a way to get adopted. We'll see what happens to the fate of that bill. So we're just about out of time for this week's show. Really great to have you here, Greg Bluestein, Todd Rehm, always a pleasure. Jim Galloway, thank you for being here. As we close out the show today, I do want to take a minute to say something about our great producer, Booker, Daryl Welch. You know, Daryl came to us as an intern when he was studying at Georgia State a little later in life. He's a retired firefighter. He's given his service to the state and to the county of DeKalb on that. And he did such a great job that we hired him to work through the legislative session. And now it's time to say goodbye. Daryl, any final thoughts from you?
This is the fastest hour on radio, and it's been a great pleasure to be associated with it.
All right. Daryl Welch, thank you for everything you've done for us. Our producer is Jenny Ament. It's always fun to get to talk to you all on the radio about what's brewing in politics in Georgia. We'll see you again next Wednesday for Political Rewind at 2 in the afternoon. Have a great weekend.